Welcome to the Living Permaculture Show on Public Radio KDNK. I'm Stephanie Sison, here with my co-host, Jerome Osentowski. Today we'll be exploring a farming method that many of our listeners may not be familiar with, a method that focuses on collecting and culturing indigenous microorganisms. We are talking about the Korean natural farming method. Our guest today, Eli Bajalia, is a permaculture designer and detoxification specialist, an ecological activist, a self-taught soil scientist, and a natural farmer with an emphasis on Korean natural farming methods. Eli built the first food forest in Jacksonville, Florida, and helped to found the Food Park Project, LLC, an organization dedicated to producing ecologically sound parks full of food and medicine. He's in the process of putting down his roots in the North Fork Valley, lucky us, and expanding his knowledge of dryland permaculture knowledge and industrial hemp production. Welcome to the show, Eli.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
It's going great. Thanks for joining us here. For our listeners, I just met Eli recently at Jerome's 75th birthday party in Basalt, and was inspired to hear more about his amazing work in Florida, and extremely elated to hear that he is beginning some of that work here or in our nearby North Fork Valley. Jerome, did you already know Eli before your party?
Well, we saw some videos that he was doing, and I think we did actually network and communicate a little bit before that. Yes, and then
came up and did a tour of the food forest right up there, and I was just completely blown away.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Well, we brought bananas and pears from Peony actually, and citrus today to eat. We just harvested some bananas yesterday.
That's wonderful. It's been a good season for that down here. We didn't have much of a winter last year, so you normally can't grow bananas here, and it's amazing that you can grow them in Basalt and not in North Florida. kind of mind-blowing.
Well, Jerome has a little help from that nice giant greenhouse. I imagine you don't have to do such things down in Florida.
No, if you did, it would definitely up the ante a little bit.
Well, talk to us a little bit about your EM and your Korean. I know that there's a lot of information about the Korean and Chinese and Japanese in King's book that came out in 1906. You're familiar
no,
with that?
No, I'm not familiar. I'm not familiar with that.
Well, it's called 40 Centuries of Agriculture, and it documents all of that stuff that went on for 40 centuries of the amazing agriculture that was going on in China, Korea, and Japan.
And then Japan, the natural farming movement in Japan was pretty big.
Yeah.
And I think that's when, go ahead.
No, well, I just love, before we jump right into the specifics of the farming method, which I'm sure our listeners are eager to hear about, I'd love to hear, Eli, from you a little bit about the work you're doing and what has inspired you to take this path. Just a little background for our listeners who don't know who you are.
Okay, I started the first food forest down here in Jacksonville, Florida. It's it's not quite a tropical climate here. It's not quite subtropical. We do get freezes and frost, and most people here have the pretty green lawn and the gated golf type of community, cookie cutter neighborhoods. And I didn't have any type of restrictions in my neighborhood to do something a little different. So I decided I wanted to build a food forest. So I literally just covered the entire lawn, which isn't much. The whole property is about just under a quarter of an acre with the house sitting on it. And I literally just covered it in cardboard and brought in like 22 yards of wood chips and horse poop and covered the entire thing in poop and sheet mulched the entire property. And the neighbors were like, "What is going on here?" And so as that mellowed out, because that had to, actually sit there for a few months before I could plant into it, we started up right out the back door, just like the permaculture principle, start at your back door. We started sheet mulching and bringing in a little bit of compost and getting our vegetables planted in the backyard right out the back door. And then as the front kind of mellowed out, and then we just started plugging in, huge diversity of trees and bushes and shrubs. And it's about 5.5 years and that's about 6 years going now, and all the fruit trees are in full production. Things grow really fast here. We get a lot of rain, you know, so it's mainly a citrus kind of production area we live in. We're not too far north. We're on the edge of the citrus-producing areas of Florida. So, you know, we grow pears and plums and citrus and lots of lemons and things like that. It's quite different from where you guys are, where your understory, you get a lot of production out of your understory here. You know, it's our understory are like chop-and-drop kind of plants where we're doing a lot of nutrient cycling. So we built this, you know, food forest, and then it kind of stemmed off to putting them in different locations. Me and my partner at the time were building them kind of all over town, and the movement kind of caught on, and the permaculture group, Jacksonville's permaculture group on Facebook caught on, and we started that. Now there's 3,000 members and very active open community, and these things are going in everywhere. So we had to kind of pave the way and build that initial model, and you know, it wasn't easy. The CG came after us a couple of times and he didn't like what we were doing, so we had to kind of find a little niche way out of that. There's a Florida-friendly landscaping law, which we kind of slid into, which if you're, you know, not using much water and protecting the wildlife and giving the, you know, wildlife habitat, you can continue onward. But the local municipalities here did not know their own law, so we had to kind of lure them in and educate them to what we were doing. And so, yeah, it's beautiful. It's a straight-up jungle at this time of year.
Great.
Going into winter, you know, so the citrus are starting to turn orange right now.
And you have a lot of how-to videos on your website. People would probably be enjoy looking at some of those.
Yeah, not necessarily how-to, mainly like seasonal tours. So we had a guy come out and film some stuff, and he would come out at different times of the year and make a video, and they caught on like wildfire. I mean, a couple of them have 230,000 views on YouTube, and you could just search like Eli Permaculture on YouTube, and all these videos come up, and me and my partner at the time kind of touring you through the property. And it's a very diverse place. Completely no-till. We never till the land there. And that's kind of how I got into the natural farming, is because I had some issues with the no-till. After about 5 years in, I started to get like a little soil surface crusting and weird stuff happening, and nobody can answer. I still don't know anybody that's 100% no-till long-term. We never tilled once. And so I got into the natural farming and started doing the cover cropping to, you know, in between crops or undercropping existing vegetable plantings to get that soil broken up. And then I kind of got into the whole Fukuoka style plantings where I'd just go out there with tons of cover crop and be slinging seeds out. Like we just had a hurricane come through here and everyone was completely freaking out. And, you know, I was like, sweet, it's going to rain for 5 days. This is a great time to go out and sling some seed.
Yeah, great time to plant seed right before it rains.
Yeah. Yeah, it's 100% germination, guaranteed. And they all came up.
And so what, from this permaculture kind of experience and background, and then this interest in natural farming, where did the Korean natural farming method come from? Because I think that's a term that a lot of our listeners are not familiar with. And for me, myself, I wasn't completely familiar with until I met you as well. So I'm really interested in where that shift came in and what drew you to it.
A couple of things. Number one, my partner at the time had lived in Hawaii. She spent a lot of time on the islands out there, mainly Maui, but a little bit on the Big Island. And she came back from a trip, and I saw a picture, and the picture was of all these piles of this weird-looking stuff that was, like, fuzzy and white and moldy-looking underneath these little makeshift canopies made of bamboo and thatch. They were trying to keep the rain off of these little piles, and I was like, what is that? And she went as far as to say this is a natural farming technique, and I started researching it from there, just from that image, because I'd never seen anything like it. It's similar to a bokashi type of composting. It's a very bokashi is just a generic term for a specialty compost of some kind. It can be anything. Now bokashi, people know bokashi from the bokashi bucket. You know, you add a little bit of wheat germ to a bucket of your food scraps, and it kind of eats your food scraps down. It sort of pickles it. So that was that one image stuck in my head. So I was like, I have to look into this because this is, you know, I was making compost teas and I was making lots of compost. I had worm bins everywhere. And this is something completely new to me. And then I started studying it and I realized that most of the inputs are completely edible. And I was like pretty blown away by that because I was really into health at the time. I had adopted a raw vegan diet and I was eating lots of fresh food to help me out with some health conditions that I had at the time. And it worked. So the connection to food, health, and what was growing in my yard was very clear at that time. And so people were eating the inputs that they were spraying on their plants and spraying on their yard, and I was just completely blown away by that. I was like, well, if it's good enough to, you know, eat, I mean, there's just no fertilizers or inputs that people are marketing to people that are completely safe to consume and actually beneficial.
Right.
EM is...
So a lot of our listeners are really familiar with like an aerobic compost tea that's aerated and made from manure or compost. And so that would
sure.
be something they're really familiar with, which is what you were just speaking of. And where or why does the Korean natural farming method go more towards this anaerobic, non-manure based composting system
I wouldn't say, I would not say it's anaerobic. There is one input in the system that is anaerobic, and that is the lactic acid bacteria serum, which is very similar to EM, effective microorganisms, which is basically like whey protein or whey juice. It's like the byproduct of making cheese, and it's full of like lactic acid bacteria, which you already have in your gut. 70% of the air around us is lactic acid bacteria, which is really beneficial to the health of you, to the health of your garden, to the health of the planet, really. And they're primarily primary decomposers and sanitizers of our environment. You can clean up a lot of waste with this particular bacteria. So the actual creation of the core, so there's different elements to the system. IMO is the nickname for indigenous microorganisms. So there's four versions of that. There's IMO 1 through 4. And one, you go out to the wild and you actually collect these organisms from like a healthy environment near your farm. And you guys are in the mountains, so you always want to go up in altitude because the microbes above you are hardier than the microbes down in the valley. So you'd collect these microbes and then you would grow these out on rice. In Korea, you know, rice is pretty much the staple food there. Any starch would work. But rice is just simple, and you know, you boil it, you cook it, and it's completely sterile. It's ready to be inoculated. And so you expose this to a very beautiful, healthy landscape, and that rice becomes inoculated with the beneficial microbes in that area, and it fuzzes over and turns white and beautiful, and there's mycelium growing all over it, and it's warm. You can feel it. It's, like, full of life. So that is IMO1. And then you take that and you mix that in with brown sugar, the same amount by weight. So you weigh the rice, you weigh the brown sugar, and you mix the two. And that essentially puts all those microbes to sleep and puts it in a stable form. And you put it in a jar and you put a cloth over the top.
Kind of like you're making kombucha or sauerkraut?
Yeah, essentially. And that's another way that the Korean figured it out. They ate a lot of kimchi and sauerkraut, and wherever they dumped their buckets out in their gardens grew better there. So it was observation. It was like, you know, the core of permaculture.
Right. Oh, there's something here.
Yeah, right. So when you take that initial collection from the wild and you stabilize it with brown sugar, it's pretty much timeless at that point. And you locked all those microbes into this like gruel-like substance. It's this brown gruel is what it looks like. And you just store that somewhere dark and cool, and that'll keep for at least a couple of years, probably a lot longer. And I look at these things under the microscope. I'm self-trained with a microscope. I study Elaine Ingham and her compost tea methods. And so I look at all these things, kind of have a scientific mind, so I'm not just taking this as like face value. I'm doing my own research, and it's completely alive at that point, and you can look at that. When you mix it with brown sugar, that's called IMO2. So that substance right there is the core, because it stabilized indigenous microbes from the wild. And then when you want to wake those up and use them, kind of just take a handful and put it in a 5-gallon bucket and stir it up with your hand. At that point, it's active. They come back alive. And then you can pour that on another medium, food source, like the sugar is a food source, but then you can dump them on a big pile of wheat bran or a big pile of a mill run is what they call it. It's the byproduct of making wheat. I've heard of people using macadamia nut husk shells in the tropics. It's got to be just a high-protein source, like a starch or a high-protein food. And you kind of dump that bucket on that 5-gallon bucket that's got the IMO2 in it on that, and then it grows out again like it did on the rice, and that big pile of stuff gets all fuzzy, and it's got mycelium all over, and it smells really sweet and fermenty.
And so, it sounds like there's 1,000 different details that go into this method. I'd love
really
for
is.
You, like, really quick, and we can go over it again later, but if there's a resource right now that where our listeners are thinking, like, wow, that's really interesting. I get this growing of the microorganisms, but, I want to learn more and figure out these details of what you're talking about. Would there be a good book or resource for someone to turn to learn all those details?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a online book, Cho's Global Farming. So the guy who kind of came up with all this, his name is Master Cho or Dr. Cho. He was the Korean who brought this to the world, and he gave it to the world for free. He didn't want anything out of it. So Cho's, C-H-O, S, Global Farming. If you just look that book up, the PDF's free online. And that's one book. Master Cho brought this technology, I call it a technology, to Hawaii. And it's caught on in Hawaii because, you know, obviously they're very isolated out there, and food security is a real deal out there. If the ships stopped coming, they would have to produce all of their own food, and they know it, so they're smart, and they're building soil, and all these techniques are really just to get super high quality soil full of life. That's what this whole system's all about, because that biology is what keeps the planet alive. It's what keeps your garden healthy. It's what keeps your plants from getting sick, and it's what keeps you from getting sick. So that's a good resource. There's videos. If you type in Korean natural farming on YouTube, my friend Chris Trump, he will come up. He's putting together a nice series of videos right now, trying to simplify it, because there is 1,000 little details, and you can make it a bunch of different ways. It's like permaculture. Being resourceful and using what's at hand.
Right.
So that's why I was like, some people use wheat mill run, some people use wheat bran as
so
a source.
So you can use what you have around.
I think you probably could use spent grain from the brewery.
Mm.
You probably could, yeah.
I think
brewery drag.
Yeah, the other resource that I would really recommend for our listeners is to get 40 Centuries of Farming by Dr. King. Because he goes back in 40 centuries, from 1906, and these techniques were stable. They were working for 40 centuries back in Asia, and he documents every possible way of doing variations on what you're talking about. They even went into people's houses and paid them to take the floor out and use that as a compost starter.
Mm.
Like you're talking about making all these, they actually went in and dug up the dirt floor, because they found some really amazing enzymes in that floor, and they would replace the floor for them, and they took that out and made compost with that as a starter. So there's so many variations on what you're talking about, but
yeah, and the main core of all of it is literally the microbes. We're talking about, when we say microbes, we're talking about bacteria, fungi, protozoa, nematodes. All of those are microbes or microorganisms, and then feeding them and growing them out. So if you're making compost tea, that's what you're doing. You're taking the microbes, you're extracting them into water, and you're feeding them, and they expand at an exponential rate. Every 20 minutes, the population doubles. You know, these techniques that Jerome speaks of, it's the same thing. It's taking that microbe, that really rich full of life substance, and then replicating it and growing it out. So there's a million ways to do that. And the Korean way, you know, they ferment everything. They're fermenters is what they do. They ferment everything they eat pretty much. And they're much healthier.
Eli, I'm going to jump in real quick. Sorry. You are listening to the Living Permaculture Show on Public Radio KDNK. We are talking with Eli Bajalia about his work with the Korean natural farming method. Okay, so we're back in there. Just had to take a quick break. We have a couple of
announcements here. It has to do with moving some food, some fruit from the Paonia Valley to the Standing Rock. And we've already sent some stuff up there from Crimpy to help out with the protest movement. And we were just over getting some pears from Larry's orchard. And then a few of us got together, and we're going to be taking a bunch of apples up there on the 8th. We have a driver, we have a truck, and now we're looking for volunteers to go over to Paonia and pick at the old river trading post, at Excelsior Orchard, and at White Buffalo. And if anybody from the Roaring Fork Valley wants to go over there, they should call Robin Paz at 970-260-9569. That's 260-9569. We're going to be doing that in the next week or so, and we're going to take a whole trailer of apples up to the Standing Rock, folks. And there's firewood is going to go up there. Also, if anybody has any meat, frozen meat, that they could take up, I'll have to get a hold of Jock and see if he has anything. But that's something that we're going to connect the dots here. There's a lot of fruit over in Paonia just falling on the ground, not being used. And we're going to put that fruit in a trailer and haul it up to the demonstration up there.
And Jerome, real quick, can you, if any of our listeners haven't been tuned in and they don't know what Standing Rock is, can you give us the one sentence briefing on why this is important and they should share their time and resources with this group of people?
Well, our listeners here have been listening to Amy Goodman. They probably know what Standing Rock is.
Good.
She's been covering it. I know that Josie's mom was up there 3 weeks ago, and they took a bunch of our plums, and when the dogs were biting the demonstrators, they were eating. She was passing out our plums, and then I'm sure they were throwing the seeds on the bulldozed ground and
planting plum trees.
So what we need to do is we need to plant all those apple seeds on that ground that they're bulldozing up there, and plant an apple orchard after we hopefully they can stop the pipeline. But anyway, that's something we could do here and get some movement into do something for the people that are struggling to get that pipeline stopped up there.
There it is. Great.
There's plenty of fruit. You know, it's a bumper crop this year. Amazing.
Yeah, and it's all falling on the ground. It's amazing.
I know.
Resources are not evenly distributed anywhere anymore.
That's another thing about the Korean natural farming is you could take all those pears and you can ferment them down and make a fermented fruit juice that you could spray back on your pear trees next year. That's one of the inputs of the system. And if you guys would like me to continue talking about the IMOs and all that, we got to IMO 2, which was the stabilized collection from the wild into the brown sugar. And then IMO 3, you grow it out in another pile of some sort of high protein substance. It could be wheat meal run, wheat bran, or whatever.
Well, Eli, I would super love to hear, and I'm sure our listeners would love to hear about those details, but as we suspected, we weren't going to have time to go into those. So we're going to have to do another recording for our folks because we have just a minute or so left. And I'd really love...
It goes quick.
I know, it does. It goes so fast every time. I would really love for you to share, I know you've shared some resources, but your contact information or any businesses that you're associated with. So when you're out here, if people want to reach you, they can do that?
Yeah, you could go to thefoodparkproject.com, thefoodparkproject.com. That is the organization that was started down here in Florida, building food parks, which are parks full of food and medicine like you're doing up there, very similar. you can send me an email at elibaha@comcast.net, and I'll be more than happy to answer any questions.
Excellent.
And definitely check the videos out. If you just YouTube Eli Permaculture, you'll see, you know, a nice tour of the food forest we built down here. And I will be posting some videos of the work that we've done in the Paonia area very soon.
Eli, we got to cut you off. It was great to have you on today. And I just want to leave everyone with a quote from James Oppenheim. The foolish man seeks happiness in the distance. The wise grows it under his feet. So I hope you all go out and make some great soil today. And thanks for tuning in to the Living Permaculture Show. We will see you next month.
Thank you.